Okay, welcome back to another edition of Addiction and Redemption. I realize I haven't released in a while, so bear with me. I did three episodes. I think I recorded three episodes last Sunday, and I released twice, two of them at once. I don't think I'm going to do that again, release two at once, but I'm going to try to get on more regular intervals now. So maybe Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. How's that sound? Does that sound good? If you have a problem with that or if you like that, you can email me at dave@davekeenest.com. Again, I'm your host, Dave Keenest, and we are just plowing through the addiction part of the Addiction and Redemption story. And I want to plug my new show. I started another show called Fascinating Talks, in which I'm trying my hand at interviewing, and it's been really fun. I think I've probably conducted anywhere between 8 and 10, maybe 11 interviews, and all different types of people. I interviewed my first coach, or one of my first coaches, a man by the name of Hans Phillips, and then another former coach of mine who was a drill sergeant, a guy by the name of Rodney Mueller. And then I interviewed, actually on Friday afternoon, or last Friday, I interviewed a former dominatrix who I know from the recovery community, and that was just a really amazing talk, and hearing her story of addiction and redemption. And then I interviewed my psychotherapist, the bass player of my favorite band, or one of my favorite bands, Teenage Bottle Rocket, Miguel Chen. So I'll be releasing those here in the next couple weeks, probably twice a week. I'll be releasing the Fascinating Talks. So stay tuned for those. Those are really cool. And again, this is brought to you by Keenest Coaching. And again, WTF is life coaching. Hit me up and find out. Just really look into your heart and ask yourself, are you living a life that's worthy of you? And if you're not, you'd like to open up a conversation about what that life might look like, just shoot me an email, dave@davekeenest.com. So we left off in the last episode with this wild story. I'm on the west side of Chicago and narrowly escaped this band of teenagers, and who knows what they would have done to me. And this guy Kelly, who picked me up, and was he an angel? Was he a demon? Who knows what he was? And that hooker that we met in the morning, and I actually got back to my truck that morning, and my truck was totally trashed. It had been trashed, and I had a guitar amplifier, and the amplifier had been stolen from the back. I don't know how I got away with not pawning the amplifier, but it got stolen instead. I should have pawned it. But that happened, I want to say, early to mid-September of 2006. And that was really the last semblance of anything remotely glamorous or remotely adventurous or remotely charming or remotely even sort of cool. I could dress that story up and make it sound cool, and I just kind of, like, if I wanted to, I could dress the Japan story up and make it sound cool and sort of like glamorous in some sense. I could glorify it. But that was really the last thing that happened that was even, not that it was cool, it wasn't, but it was the only thing that I could look back on and be like, yeah, that's a fascinating story to tell. Because or an adventurous story to tell, maybe, an adventurous and fascinating story to tell. But from here, it was just downhill. It was just all downhill. And I want to fast forward maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. If you want to read the entire story that I wrote out, in the entire story that I'm about to tell, if you want to read the story, the memoir style story, you could go to davekeenest.wordpress.com and just go look up the name of my blog on there is Undercover Angel, and you can look up the story and read it. And I'm not going to give away the story just yet, the name of the story just yet, but it was October 16th, 2006, so I had gotten out of rehab maybe 6 weeks earlier, my first treatment center, and it had just gotten worse and worse and worse, and I don't know what I was doing for money at this point. I can't remember how I was hustling money, or if the credit card still worked, or maybe I was stealing from my parents at this point, or stealing from somebody. I can't remember, but it was a gray morning. It was just one of those gray days. And I remember it was kind of warm. It wasn't that cold. It was maybe in the mid-50s or the low 60s, but it was just gray. Just a gray day. And by this point, I'm an out of control alcoholic. So in the mornings, I'm just having to drink. And then as soon as I'm done drinking, or as I'm drinking, I'm planning how I'm going to get down to the ghetto, the west side, to get the dope that I need. And this particular morning, I remember taking a bottle of red wine. I think it was 9 o'clock, maybe 8:30. And I remember just taking this bottle of red wine from my parents' wine rack. And it was a nice bottle. I can't remember what it was. Maybe a Merlot. I think Merlot's red. I don't know my wine. But I'm glad I never turned into a wine person. I think adulthood and wine is just kind of lame. But that's just my shit opinion. So you can disregard that if you're a wine lover. But anyway, I remember drinking this bottle of wine. Like, I would basically just pound the whole thing and like pour it into a glass and just chug it. And I remember drinking this wine and not being able to get it down, and then just puking it up into the toilet and just having that wine stare back at me. And it just looked like blood just staring back at me and showing me how sick and disgusting I had become. I was just, by this point, I'm just a disgusting, filthy disgrace. And all that treatment, all that hope, all of that opportunity, all of the good stuff that I had been introduced to was just may as well have existed in another time and place and dimension altogether. I had no access to it. I had no idea how to get that back. And I'd actually gotten healthy in rehab, and I had put on a bunch of weight, and I hadn't started working out yet or anything like that. I hadn't really gotten myself into physical shape, but I had gotten myself into a decent headspace, and here it is 6 weeks later, and it's just all squandered. And this happens to so many people. I mean, this happens to like 80% of the people that go to treatment, literally, if not more, at least 80%. And so 6 weeks later, I'm just lost again. And I drank that wine and I puked it up, and it was just disgusting. And I remember I was wearing this gray, not gray, navy blue hoodie, like zip in the front hoodie. And I left the house and I went down, I got on the train and I was riding the Metra. And the way I would do it at this point, because at this point I had quit driving. I must have sold my car at some point in here, or sold my truck, but I had quit driving altogether for whatever reason. I can't recall specifically, but which is good because my license was officially revoked I don't know if it was officially revoked, but I was not allowed to drive. I guarantee you that. So I'm riding the train, and there's these two people who are sitting behind me, these two chefs, a man and a woman, and they're talking about football. They're talking about the Bears and who the Bears were playing that night. I can't remember who the Bears were playing, but I remember like trying to start small talk with them, and they just really weren't interested in talking with me at all. But this is what normal people did. This is one of the lines I say in the writing. This is what normal people with normal lives did. They went to work and they talked about sports. And I was just not a normal person anymore. And these people were chefs, and I used to cook. I cooked for so many years in Colorado. I don't know if I've mentioned that throughout the podcast, but I cooked for 8 years. And I remember just thinking, like, man, that I used to get up and go to work and not have to ingest alcohol, and I was kind of normal. And even though I drank after work almost every night, like getting up and getting to work without slamming alcohol was entirely possible. It didn't even occur to me to drink in the mornings back then. And so I'm riding the train, and I get off the way that I would do this is I would get off at the Oak, which is what half the junkies do, or all the junkies rather, that take the train from the western suburbs. They take the Metra and they get off at the Oak Park stop, and you have to then take the green line, catch the green line, and you take the green line to Cicero, which I think is six stops. And so it just feels like an eternity as this is happening, because you're just so sick and you just need your fix so bad. It's just the worst thing ever. And it just takes forever. And I remember like I said, I remember it being warm. And we took, I got off at the stop. I got off at Cicero or Oak Park, and then I got on the Green Line and I went to Cicero. And there's just a grind to it. This is just like a full-time job at this point. It's just awful. Like, imagine if you had to do that to go to work every day and you weren't a junkie. It would just, it sucked. Like, with the train transfer and then going in the West Side. And I got my stuff. And I think that this was happening at this point. The way it would work is you would cop your dope, and then I would cop my dope on Fulton, at Cicero and Fulton, and then I would cut through this sort of alleyway thing to this back alley, cut through these two buildings and then get to this back alley. And there was this crack house in the back alley, and you would actually have to pay this guy who's just like this other junkie. Like, it's not like he worked for the gangs or the drug dealers. He was like a junkie. But you'd have to pay him $1 to go up to the crack house and shoot up. I might have started doing this after this particular day happened, but anyway, I got my dope and I got high down there, and I'm walking back to the train, and this I bump into this guy I know, this other junkie guy I know. I think his name is Matt. And for whatever reason, he was like in a good mood that day. He gave me a free bag, or maybe even two bags. He's like, "Hey man, here's some free shit." And I was like, "What? Like, thanks, dude. Like, free shit." And this just never happened. I mean, it just never happened. Like, junkies do not share. And he shared with me that day, and it was really kind of like this beautiful act of love. And so I took the stuff and I put it in my shoe. And I'm like pretty high at this point, and I got more. So I'll get on the train, I'll go back to Oak Park, I'll go to the Starbucks. Starbucks in Oak Park, Illinois, by the way, by the metro station. A lot of junkies go in there to get high. If you ever hang out there, you'll notice it. But so I get back to the train platform, and my plan is to just get back to the suburbs and just have a nice high day, you know, and my cares are gone. And so because I'm drunk, you know, I mentioned that wine. I think I guzzled some more after that just to make sure I got it down and kept it down. But I was not thinking clearly. And I'm fidgeting around on the train platform, and I reach into my shoe. Why I would do this, I have absolutely no idea. This is like the stupidest thing you could ever do. I reach into my shoe and I grab the bag. Yeah, it was one bag, actually. It wasn't two. I grab the little foily, the little blow, as I've called them before, and I pull it out of my shoe. And I just wanted to feel it. Like, it was like I just needed it. I just needed to feel it in my hand instead of my shoe. I just needed to know that it was closer. I just needed to know that I was that much closer to getting what I needed, to getting that feeling, to having that pain go away. And I'm sitting there fidgeting with it at the train stop. And all of a sudden, this guy walks up. And he goes, "Excuse me." He's real polite. He goes, "Excuse me." And I looked up, and he goes, "I'm with the Chicago Police Department." He's real nice and friendly. He said, "Why don't you come here?" And he grabbed me. And then this other guy came over from, like, the other side of the platform. And all of a sudden, I'm arrested. I'm caught. And he just kind of grabs it out of my hand. Or he says, "What is that you got there?" And I'm just like, I don't know. And he just sort of, like, directs me. He just sort of grabs my hand and just sort of, like, controls my hand. You know, and I'm just completely like, if I'd have been thinking straight, I could have swallowed it or thrown it in my mouth. And I mean, that's what you can do. You can swallow it. And then it's up to them if they're going to shove their finger down your throat. I have heard stories of that happening, but I'm not that street smart. So I didn't even think to do that. And so I'm fucked. I'm busted. And I don't think I've ever been more terrified in my entire life as I was at that moment. Literally, I do not think I've ever, ever been more terrified. And so all of a sudden, here I am. He just throws the cuffs on me, and I'm under arrest in public, and there's all kinds of people standing around there looking at me. And they've seen this kind of thing happen before because this is their neighborhood, and this kind of stuff happens all the time. But this was not supposed to happen to me. This was just not in the cards. I was not supposed to get arrested that day. And heroin possession is a felony. So I'm gonna stop there and resume with what happened with the rest of that day. in the next episode. So thanks so much for listening. Again, Addiction and Redemption. And tune into Fascinating Talks when you get a chance. It'll be out in probably, like I said, at the week at the absolute most. I'll start cranking those episodes out, and really cool stuff. So thanks again. Love you all. Have a beautiful day.